This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is Perino on Politics.
When it comes to campaign cash, President Biden is saying, show me the money, but how much will fundraising help him come November? There's going to be plenty of money in this race no matter what. Welcome to Perino on Politics, where we give you everything you need to know from a 30,000-foot view of this week in politics. And joining me today is my friend, who I'm very excited for you to meet, President and CEO of Squared Communications, Michael Meehan. You may have seen him on Fox as well over the years. He's a good friend of mine. And Michael, welcome to Perino on Politics. How are you doing?
So glad to be with you. Great.
I thought that because sometimes I just jump in and say, okay, let's start talking politics because I think people know my friends. That isn't always the case. Can you give people a little bit about your background and then maybe end on how we met?
Okay. So I came to Washington as a young intern for my home state senator, who was John Kerry, and proceeded to work on Capitol Hill for the better part, and still actually do. I still work for Senator Maria Cantwell, running her re-election campaign in Seattle this year. But I've sort of worked my way up the press secretary ladder for a bunch of senators, congressmen. I worked at the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee, John Kerry's presidential campaign. And then about 14 years ago, I started my own business, which is a little blend of political consultancy and a little bit of public relations. And then along came this opportunity to work on the Broadcasting Board of Governors. And my favorite part was I was nominated by President Bush because the board that you and I both served on had to have a bipartisan split. We had to, so it was they paired you and me together.
Yeah, I was nominated by Obama and you were nominated by Bush.
Yes. And then I never made it through on Bush. Someone put a hold on me and then I got paired up with you. And I think that's how our friends got us through onto that board.
Thank you, Senator Mitch McConnell.
Exactly.
And one of the things Michael and I did along the way is we worked a lot with figuring out how to help get the internet access in a free and fair way to people around the world who wouldn't necessarily have it, like those people who live in Iran, for example, or China. And we also focused on early education for children and maternal health in lots of places like Africa. This was like Voice of America. Think Voice of America, but in a it's international. So we got to travel to Africa together. That was super special. We ended up buying bikes one day for kids at an orphanage on the side of the road because we were just determined these kids were going to get the bikes. And you're not only a great friend of mine who I remember spending the week before South Sudan became a country with you and eating French fries with you and Susan McHugh in the one restaurant in the town, but I also love learning from you, and I feel that this is an important time for me to have somebody like you on this podcast, because often a lot of people that I know have their roots in Republican politics or conservative causes, and they do political consultancy, so I see them as pretty fair-minded, but there's no doubt that they come at things thinking that, you know, Republicans are going to do very well in 2024, or they have hopes that they will do well in 2024. Now, as Michael mentioned, he has Democratic background. And so what I wanted to do today is, you know, get started on understanding what you think from your perspective is what you're excited about for Joe Biden's reelection campaign right now, what concerns you, and maybe couch that with, as we look at from the polls, we meaning on America's Newsroom this morning, you know, President Biden's approval number is not moving, at least not dramatically, and it's pretty low for an incumbent. So Republicans seem to feel pretty good. Are they right to feel good, or should they be more nervous, Michael?
Well, I think both teams should be nervous because not only are these the two oldest guys to run for office. They broke last year's record of being the two oldest guys to run for office. And through this prism, about a quarter of Americans don't like either guy. And it's very hard to predict the voting behavior of when somebody doesn't like you, regardless of whether you're running for president or any other office for that matter. And it's pretty rare, right? America knows both of these guys very well. There's pretty much nothing that can be said in the next 7 months that people haven't already heard about, you know, two of the highest profile figures of both parties. Mm-hmm. So now you're into the weeds on how do you get somebody who, you know, Biden's at 45, Trump's at 45. So the last 10%. Okay, that's always the case. You know, most of America sorts itself out long before Labor Day, and then you spend the last 2 months of a campaign trying to figure out how to move people, either getting them off the couch to come vote for you, or if they're voting for the other guy, keeping them on the couch and have them not come vote for you, because that's still the same. It's still the same goal. And I think it's pretty hard to determine today. You know, like Major League Baseball starts here in Washington this week, and the whole season will be over, and they'll be crowned a new champion, and then we'll vote for president. So there's a long time between now and when you get to the mm-hmm. final days, where people actually start voting in October.
What about the sticky issue of inflation, and especially gas and groceries? Groceries in particular seem to be something that's really tough for people. Housing, also, with people spending way upwards of like over 40%, in some places 50% of their salary or their take-home pay on shelter. So there's the inflation issue, and then there's the immigration issue. And those two issues seem like it's very hard for me to understand how President Biden makes either of those better for himself if he doesn't do some major sort of policy change. And on inflation, maybe he can't do anything at all.
Well, so politics is all about felt need. And the question is, how do you feel about inflation, the voter, right? My family, we're very well off. If it's another 50 cents a gallon of gas, we're still going to fill up our tank. A lot of people in my family are going to have a problem if the gas goes up 50%. So there's definitely pockets of voters that feel about inflation differently. Most people measure inflation by how much is a bag of groceries every mm-hmm. week, and can they swing it? Or the bag of groceries they bought a year ago is costing $30 more to fill it up now. Mm-hmm. So The incumbent president ends up wearing these negative feelings. I think Trump wore those negative feelings during the COVID period, which helped Joe Biden to go on to win. And now Biden owns some of these negative feelings for voters now. And that's back to my premise at the beginning here, is how do you predict the behavior of people who don't like either guy, strongly don't like mm-hmm. either guy?
What about on the immigration front? I think part of me feels like, how can Biden say there's nothing he can do when he did have 91 or so executive orders after he got into office? We've seen the surges that we have. They leaked out before the State of the Union that he was going to do some executive orders. They decided not to do that. I can't tell if that was based on merit or on politics, because that was right when the Republicans were sort of coalescing, well, maybe not even, but on the Senate side, thinking about this bill that doesn't get passed. And then Biden says, well, if the Congress would do something, then the border could get fixed. I just don't know if that is actually going to work, especially when the AP poll that came out over the weekend had Biden at a 30% approval on immigration.
Right. And so for most Republican voters, immigration is their number one issue. And more on the Democratic side, you have the economy and inflation and, mm-hmm. and housing, like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. So some of that's already baked in. But I think what Democrats have not done well is point out the fact that there is a deal to be had on immigration, would significantly increase people on the border, more border patrol. And Donald Trump told the Congress not to pass it, and so they didn't. So, mm-hmm. you know, with a narrowly split House and a narrowly split Senate, there's very few things you get to have everybody be on. But I think you could pass an immigration bill today if Donald Trump took his foot off the gas.
Mm. And you know, if he were to win, I wonder if he would be able to do that. More to come on that, I guess, if we see that. That's getting way ahead of ourselves. That we'll be in the middle of hockey season by the time that happens, exactly. if I'm following your lead. What about the reports that Blacks and Hispanics have softening support and some distance from Biden? In particular, I think that on the Hispanic front, it does seem pretty dramatic. And Republicans don't have to win all the Hispanic or the Black vote in order to win. They just need to win more of it than they have before.
Right. So the Democratic winning coalition for Biden last time was about 88 to 90% of the black vote and about 65% of the Hispanic vote. And Trump, in the 3 years of the Biden White House, has eaten in public polling to that. A lot of that is younger voters, black and brown voters under the age of 35, particularly men, are less excited about Joe Biden now than they were back 3 years ago. So the Biden campaign does have a bunch of work to do on that. And it's a complicated way to communicate with people now. So the Pew has a great study out that shows that 3 years ago, people under 35, 10% got all of their information from TikTok. Mm-hmm. 3 years later, 35% of people under 35 get all of their information from TikTok. The one thing about TikTok, you cannot buy a political ad on TikTok. So you have a very different way to communicate with people.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that.
When we talk to polls, yeah, no, you can't buy a political ad on TikTok.
Huh.
So when our pollsters go in and say, hey, we've been talking about abortion or we've been talking about this, 40% of the voters will go, I've never even heard of this issue, mm-hmm. because it hasn't been advertised, because you can't advertise on the medium of which they're getting their information from. So that is another complicated challenge for people like us who run campaigns.
Yeah.
How are you going to talk to a large segment of the voters who don't watch TV shows, cable shows anymore? You know, no one's seen a newspaper hit their porch in 3 decades. So like, where are you going to have your communication with voters?
Yeah. And I'm thinking about that with the algorithm, the way that it is. Let's say maybe you're concerned about inflation and gas and groceries or housing, right? On TikTok, I know the housing issue shows up a lot, especially for younger people. But would the algorithm ever send you stories and information about energy policy in the United States? Or is that, if you're not interested in it, you don't see it?
Correct.
Wow.
And that's part of the challenge with it is that like, if you and I started on TikTok today, and I think you have a very big presence, but I do not. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I started looking at my Arsenal team, and as soon as I started looking at my Red Sox, and as soon as I started looking at beaches on Cape Cod, that's what they'd start heading me that way. And as soon as I looked up the Dana Perino show, I would start seeing more things that were in your world. And if someone right next to me, same age as me, same cohort, the whole thing, started and picked, the Yankees and the San Francisco Giants, you're in a different lane. We're not going to see the same thing. Even if we're both following you or following somebody else, that's how the algorithm works. It's really hard for operatives like me trying to figure out how I could identify who my candidate's problem is, but I can't figure out how to talk to them. Mm. when you go through some of these social media apps.
How do you think about the possibility of AI and deep fakes when it comes to some of this political content? I live in fear that I'm going to be the first to air a deep fake video and think that it's real. And I live in fear of that, which is probably a healthy fear. So I'm on edge about it all the time.
Right. No, and it's terrifying, particularly for people like you in the public spotlight, because there's an interest to people are able to mess with this. I mean, AT&T today just announced they had 70 million people who had all of their information hacked 5 years ago, and they still can't figure out how all this happened. And change your password, I guess, is the answer. And it just gets more and more complicated. And big news organizations like yours spend a lot of time doing this. I'm running Senator Cantwell's campaign. I got a couple people that are paying attention to this. I don't have an army back here. Mm-hmm. That might be a
really interesting piece. I love to be an assignment editor. That's one of my favorite jobs. But for you to reflect on the first campaign you worked on versus the one you're doing now for Senator Cantwell, and just the differences in terms of tactics and how you have to adjust.
Yeah, we're I'm a little bit older than you, but of a certain age where you could put out a press release, the three local TVs would cover it because it was on the front page of the local paper. Like, I mean, that seemed like a lot of work back then. Now that's just like the tip of the day.
Wow.
92 more arguments to have.
It's fascinating.
Get the word out.
Okay, so your bottom line is you think Joe Biden is in better shape than Republicans might think right now.
Yeah, I think part of that is in part due to polling's very hard. That's the other part you want to ask about. Mm-hmm. You had a lot more confidence in a poll when I was working day to day on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. Now you can't get people to actually answer a poll, and you're really trying to figure out how to do it digitally. And the one thing since the Dobbs decision is that in all of the elections that have been held, Generally, the Democrat has overperformed the polling by 11 points with the election day results compared to where they were. That was true in a lot of the races in 22. To the extent that there are state ballot initiatives and other ballot initiatives about choice, I mean, abortion, back in the day, I used to work at NARAL, Pro-Choice America. It's one of the hardest things to poll on because a woman does not want to talk
to a stranger
about this. Mm-hmm. Do not want to talk about it.
I don't know. I think that's changing with younger women, though.
Well, right. But those younger women aren't answering the polls to let us hear their opinion. They're like, yeah, no, I'm going to make sure my voice is heard. I'm going to go vote. I'm not going to stop and talk to you or answer your questionnaire on my cell phone.
I read an article this weekend that kind of surprised me because I knew that some states were thinking about having an abortion-related referendum on the ballot. And then this article, I can't remember where I read it, so forgive me, everyone. I think it might have been The Hill. There are many more states thinking about putting an abortion referendum on the ballot in 2024 than I had seen before. And I know that Jim Messina, who's a big Democratic strategist and consultant, he had told me after the 22 election, the midterm, he said, I asked, do you think there will be a lot of abortion-related referenda on the ballot in the general election for presidential race in 2024? And he said, it will if I have anything to do about it.
Right.
And
right.
It looks like that is coming true in a lot of places. Some places wouldn't necessarily matter in the Electoral College if you're a red state or a blue state. But you start talking about some of these other states that are kind of could go either way, and that could be the difference.
Right. Because, again, back to our point when we talked about immigration and inflation, right? It's how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. Right. I've been helping Cantwell run since 2000. So in Washington state, they had a constitutional amendment to protect a woman's right to choose in 1971. The Democrats, all the statewide Democrats nobody in Washington state is worried that the Washington state is going to lose their right. People from Idaho who are looking for abortion come over the line. Yeah. So it's not as a pressing issue in Washington state, an important issue, but not as pressing as it is in places where there's a real chance that that reproductive services could be halted at the state level. And that's why these state ballots will, you know, overlay over the eight to 10 states that are actually in presidential play. I think you've got to look at it through that prism.
All right, Michael, we have more Perino on Politics coming right up.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
And we're back with Perino on Politics. Michael, I wanted to ask you about something I started with, which is the money issue in campaigns. And let's just focus on maybe Biden and Trump, and then also the Senate races. Okay, so for Biden last week, he had a big star-studded fundraiser with Obama and Clinton and all the Hollywood folks and Colbert's at Radio City Music Hall. They raised $26 million in one day. President Trump is not making as much, although he says stay tuned because he's got these billionaires coming to a big event at Mar-a-Lago soon. What about the cash advantage right now and the small dollar contributions that are kind of being eaten up by legal costs by the Trump campaigns? But that was also kind of a political issue, given that he's having to do all this in the middle of a campaign.
Yeah, generally speaking, I don't think money for a general election for president matters. But I think in this case, you know, and Biden's been doing a more effective job is that to the extent that people are contributing to Trump, he spent $50 million on his own personal legal bills, had nothing to do with his campaign, which it's his right to do. And, you know, he changed the rules at the RNC. So any check that goes to the RNC goes to his legal bills and not to House candidates or Senate candidates or down the ballot. But I think the Biden financial advantage in this beginning part allows him to, you know, because basically, if you just rerun the 2000 election, you know, you move 10,000 votes in one state or another, you're going to change the outcome of the entire electoral college. So Biden's able to put 10 offices in North Carolina, a state that he didn't win last time, and try to put another state into play. There's an open governor's race there. And if you can put field organizers on the ground, they're expensive. It costs money. Back to my point, it's harder to communicate by buying ads. You're going to have to go door to door, hand to hand, to go recruit people to vote. And that's where money on the presidential play comes into play. It's money's much more important in the Senate and the House race.
And how does that look on the Senate side? Since you're working on the Washington State, I don't think there's like a big Republican running in Washington State that's name's not coming to mind. Apologies to whoever it is.
Our filing deadline's May 10th, so I'll talk to you on May 11th. And
okay.
We can assess what the field looks like.
Okay.
But you plan for the worst and hope for the best. And so that's the stage that we're in.
But about overall for financials for the Republican candidates on the Senate side?
Yeah. So if you live in Montana and Ohio, where two Democratic senators are up in states that Trump carried by 20, 30, 40 points, there's a lot of money already being spent on the Senate race there. Mm-hmm. Arizona, Nevada, also big Senate places where you have, rookie senators up for the first time in states that will be contested for the presidential. Those states are already seeing a ton of money on the Senate side, both sides, buying ads far enough. The Senate Majority PAC put about $250 million in ad placements from now through the election, just earlier in March. So that's where money matters a lot. I mean, if you're a voter in Montana, you're going to see 9 million ads from both sides. I feel bad for those people.
But not if you're on TikTok.
Exactly. Although Montana did ban TikTok.
That's true.
but it's currently still up. But yes, but I think money matters more in the House and the Senate race than in the presidential, because there's going to be $12 billion spent on elections in America this year, and $6 billion of it will come from people that aren't Trump or Biden.
Wow, $12 billion. What a business to be in. One of the things I think the Republicans are dealing with that is a challenge, and I don't know about the state parties for the Democrats, but I just have read a lot about the state of the state parties for the Republicans, like in Arizona and Michigan, two key states that Trump would need to win in order to win the Electoral College. I mean, that's where you usually did your get out the vote efforts, and those state parties are in dire shape.
Yeah, and that's part of the people who figured out how to get people to the polls in 22, you don't need to start and reinvent the wheel every time. And I think that's where it's the chaos at the state party level impacts the top of the ticket, because you're having to find new people to be the coordinator of the Maricopa County, vans that get people to the polls. Like, if you've already done this once, you're going to be better at it the next time and the next time. But if you rip these people out and start fresh with 7 months to go, it's a hard skill to learn in a short window.
My last question in this segment is about third party matters and third party candidates. And do they matter? And RFK Jr., with his pick last week of Nicole Shanahan for his vice presidential choice, in some polls, he's getting upwards of 24th, even up to 30% in some places, in some states. He's not going to be on the ballot everywhere. I think the Nicole Shanahan pick was understandable from a financial standpoint. But when he said, this is the most qualified person to be vice president in the entire United States. I mean, I understand we're on a campaign, but I think even people who supported RFK or thought they would want to were like, wait, what? I don't see how this happens. But I'm Shanahan curious. I'm willing to learn more. But how I think that the Democrats are taking the third party threat so seriously, they even stood up an official office at the DNC with a very serious person, Liz Smith, who's a great Democratic communicator. So yes. What are your worries about RFK Jr.? I know that Trump went after him a little bit last week, too, but the Democrats, they really went after him last week with some over the top language, even.
Oh, well, I'm very worried about it. And I think the Democratic operatives are worried about it. I mean, you have a Democratic legacy name like Kennedy, and that opens a lot of doors to people. Even if the generation before me does, I wasn't alive when John Kennedy was alive, but a lot of voters were, and that family's name carries a lot. And I think it's smart that the Democrats have put someone like Liz in charge of that, because the more you look at his record, the more it's inconsistent. You got to make sure that you hold him accountable. And Trump's going to hold Biden accountable. Biden's going to hold Trump accountable. That natural sides are going to take place. But if someone is not making a case against the third party, you can, siphon off 11,000 votes, 20,000 votes. I mean, people would argue that in Florida back in 2000, you know, the fact that there was a libertarian and a green on the thing was the difference of the 537 votes. And I mean, you could switch the whole control of the White House over a third party candidate in a dozen states or two dozen states, and not even on a national ballot.
And does the Hillary Clinton team from 2016, they really do think the third party candidates hurt them, in, like in Michigan, right?
Yes, for sure, for sure. And I think, I mean, there's a good case to be made that campaigns, most of the people that will end up deciding this election won't hear this podcast unless it was on Halloween, right? They're not going to be aware that an election is happening until October, and those are the people who will say, "I hate both." That's back to my original point. Nobody's had this much intensity against both sides ever. And they're like, well, I feel like I'm obligated to vote. So I'm going to go vote, but I'm not voting for either
one. So that's, it could be a protest vote.
Correct. I mean, you look a little bit with Nikki Haley, you know, she was getting 10, 20, 25% after she stopped running, right? People were like, well, I'm still going to come out. I'm still going to, like, you know, not vote for him because I'm not completely.
Yeah, I don't want to ride in.
Yeah, maybe some of those are Democrats who could vote in an open primary, but some of them weren't open primaries. So, and Biden had some of that too. You had, you know, 10% in Michigan that were just, you know, voting for the uncommitted. But when in the 8 or 10 years that you and I have been doing this, the cycles that we've been doing this, I mean, the election has swung with probably less than 200,000 votes if you when you add them all up in any given state.
200,000.
You could have changed the outcome. Yeah. I worked for John Kerry. We lost by 5 electoral votes. It was 60,000 people in Ohio. If they had switched in Ohio, John Kerry would have been president. One state, 60,000 people. So these races, they sound like it's like millions and millions and millions of people, but it really does come down to a really small universe. The problem is you don't know who those people are by name.
Right. That's the trick. And that's a trick. All right. Exactly. We'll be right back with more Perino on Politics next. And welcome back to Perino on Politics. Michael, my last segment with you is a question that I ask all of my friends so that I don't think I'm out of touch, is what are you paying attention to that I might be missing?
Oh, well, I think we're not going to, I'm paying attention to the next generation of Democratic leaders, you know, on my side. We've got some great governors in Pennsylvania and Michigan, and you know, with an incumbent running, you know, two times in a row, you sort of lose. You lose some people that are in their political prime, or they just move on. But there's a great underbench. You know, the governor of Massachusetts is amazing. We've got some young, talented people that are leading their states that I think you don't get to hear much of because we're just rerunning back the same election from 2020 and we're running it back now.
Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania gets a lot of praise on the merits for things that he's done. He also seems to be politically quick on his feet.
Yes.
There were a couple of things that he did to squash some nonsense on the left, like taking down a statue, I think it was, or something that the Biden team had wanted to do. But he was like, no, we're not doing that today. And the White House said, OK, we're not doing that. And it was a story at 8 a.m. and it was over by 12 p.m.
Right. And that's what I mean. Like, you know, he had two terms as attorney general. He's got his ear to the ground. He's got a good handle of his state. His state is as swingy as they get, right? Pennsylvania. It's like, you know, we've had Republican senators.
Do you think that helps Biden in Pennsylvania?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And look, Biden has always treated Pennsylvania like he's the state senator from there. I mean, you know, his headquarters is in Philadelphia. Like, I mean, he knows that he's got to win. If he wins Pennsylvania, Michigan and Wisconsin, he'll get back to the White House, even if he doesn't carry every state he carried last time.
Michael, thank you so much. I have a quick pop quiz. It's one multiple choice question. Okay.
Okay.
On April 1st, 1992, NPR's Talk of the Nation program pranked listeners by announcing this mystery person was running for president. Who was he? A. Robin Williams, B. Richard Nixon, or C. Dennis Rodman?
Oh, it's got to be Rodman.
I would have thought so too, but they're telling me it's Richard Nixon.
What?
Like maybe people would have believed that. If you're listening to NPR, you might have thought that.
Maybe. I was thinking of say Ross Perot, but that wasn't an option.
Yeah, exactly.
and he actually did run in 92. So
yeah, no kidding. That was reality. Talk about third-party spoilers. Right. Although I know that is to be debated. Well, apparently the show featured an interview with a President Nixon impressionist who declared he was running for president again, this time with the slogan, "I didn't do anything wrong, and I won't do it again." Super cute. Michael, thank you so much. And we'll let you get back to your day, and appreciate you shining a light on what the Democrats are thinking as we head into 2024.
Great to be with you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Guy Benson, join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.